Southern Fried Security Podcast with Martin and Steve, Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while Yvette's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of Southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 178 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. My name is Martin Fisher. We're very glad you are with us this evening. Joining me here on the interwebs is my good friend Steve Reagan. Steve, how's the spring turning into summer working out for you?
We're actually hitting the 80s already, which is weird, but it's better than freezing cold, so I'm not going to complain. I'll wait till the humidity starts.
And then you'll really complain, I know.
Yeah.
Also with us is just to the utter joy of our entire female teenaged listening, you know, audience. Joseph Sparkles Sicoli is with us.
Hey, Martin, I'm good. With an intro like that, I always feel like a little bit of a letdown as soon as I start speaking.
No, because you've got a very McDreamy voice.
Oh, so. Well, thank you.
So, anything drop out there on the internets lately that was sort of a letdown?
You know, it's funny that you say that, Martin. Almost like it was in our show notes or something. So last week, Bad Lock dropped, or Sad Lock, depending on who you ask. Basically, there was a much hyped vulnerability that had its own website. It had its own logo. I think there was a theme song.
True quality.
There was a pre-release announcement that they were going to announce a release of a vulnerability, I think. Basically, there was a lot of hype about Bad Lock, and then when it came out, it turned out that it was much less impressive of a vulnerability than it had previously been hyped. In fact, it had been massively overhyped. There were some pretty scathing backlash articles, particularly like one from Weldpond over on TechCrunch that I'll toss into the show notes. Talking about how hyping vulnerabilities is no longer helping application security awareness. It wasn't received well. So that got me kind of thinking. Last episode, we talked a lot about cautionary tales, how that affects the organization, how to use those. And I was curious, Martin, I know you had some thoughts, particularly pertaining to kind of how these hyped vulnerabilities become cautionary tales, how they affect the business. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, but I think first, Steve, your viewers, you can't see the little quotes, since you're a journalist. So
I'm going to give you my own quotes back. Thanks.
But I mean, you know, dude, seriously, you're in and amongst a lot of just the normal hype cycle stuff. So I think it might be instructive for folks who, you know, they're only on the receiving end of it. You know, they're seeing the articles and the articles that are written about the articles and the articles that are written about the articles about the articles, and they're sort of on the receiving end of the hype fire hose. Kind of talk about how this stuff happens, you know, from the sausage making side. You know, what you know, because obviously they're going to come see people like you first to hopefully get some traction so these things get talked about.
So the sausage making isn't pretty, as you would expect, and no two bugs are alike. So, for example, and we'll stick with Bad Lock here. When the company behind Bad Lock promoted it, they spread it around to a couple of people, and it kind of took on a life of its own. Cernet is the name of the company behind it, and they do Samba consulting, and they have 6 employees who actually develop Samba. They work on the project. So what had happened was there's this vulnerability, and they decide that, you know, they need to tell people about it. So they registered a domain. They gave it a name. They made a little logo for it. And 3 weeks before a patch was to be released, they announced it to the public. Now, I don't know if they had a PR company or anybody helping them, but I do know that that has happened before. there have been PR people involved in bug disclosure, and it's kind of weird, but it's a thing now, apparently. So when you look at Badlock, what is it? According to the original disclosure that was on the website, they called it a crucial security bug in Windows and Samba that's about to be disclosed. Engineers at Microsoft and the Samba team are working together to get this problem fixed. Patches will be released on April 12th, okay? So that is all anybody had 3 weeks before this came out. Now, it seems a little hyped, a little overmarketed, so they were – naturally, there's some blowback on this. But then everybody started digging around, myself included, and that's when you discovered that the company behind this disclosure – actually has a horse in the race. Not only do they develop the product in question, they sell services around this product. It's part of their core business. So that got people thinking, now, wait a minute. Are you telling me that they're warning people about a bug that they may have actually created themselves because they contribute to the project and they're using it for marketing? That seems far-fetched. So I confronted the person responsible, the owner of the Badlock domain on Twitter, and asked him. You know, I straight up went to him. I said, given you profit off of Samba Consulting, how is this not marketing for your company? And he said it was a win-win situation. Why not market it? It's a serious bug, and it's going to get attention, and we're going to benefit from this. So it's okay. And I was a little upset by that. Now, as it turns out, you know, once the bug became public and everybody dug through the source code, the person who discovered this vulnerability was also the one who committed the code that created the vulnerability. And that in itself is a completely different story. What we're talking about is the hype cycle, okay?
Right.
So when this was first introduced, it was hyped up as a critical bug. Well, Microsoft didn't even list it as that. When Microsoft produced their patch on Tuesday last week, they gave it an important rating. And most every other vendor who put this out didn't list it as a critical issue. It's something you should patch. You should most definitely pay attention to it. And if it impacts your organization, deal with it. But it's nothing like what they were hyping it up to be. And that's when the blowback started. So let's talk about a bug that did get a lot of hype, but was actually hype worthy. And what I'm talking about, of course, is going back to... what is the name of that little special bug that we had?
Heartbleed?
Heartbleed, I think that's what it was called. Heart attack, heart shock, something. So, and jokes aside, Heartbleed was serious, and Heartbleed had a lot of hype behind it. But look at the difference between the two. Heartbleed was controlled, okay? You didn't get a three-week hype cycle. You didn't get 3 weeks' notice. I think it was 24 hours. Like the Heartbleed domain and everything came out, and then the very next day the patches dropped.
Right.
And this was controlled down to the wire for a reason. Nobody wanted anybody to have any reason to start digging through SSL. But even that kind of short window wasn't enough, because the minute Heartbleed was announced to the public, you immediately saw the impact. You had people attacking it. You had scanners going for it and looking for it. But worse, this bug seemed to impact everything. It just didn't, you know, there was no gate around this.
Right.
And that created a lot of good reason for the hype. You needed to get the point across of how serious this issue was. And in that case, naming the bug made sense.
Right. I saw Heartbleed as sort of being the logical extension of, gosh, it was probably back in 2008, when Dan Kaminsky did his coordinated release of the DNS killer bug.
Yep.
Right. And Dan got a lot of well justified and well earned props for doing something that was important, because, I mean, that bug potentially hugely impactful. I think we've seen a couple since, but I think you called it out. It's when all of a sudden, you know, what has in the past been generally we're doing this to get everyone's attention. It's for the good of the ecosystem, for the good of the whole. And with Badlock, it just seemed much more blatantly a marketing opportunity gone completely awry.
Yeah, what really irks me, and I'm not, and for the record, I'm not blaming Stefan for the flaw at all for Badlock. Yeah, he committed the code that, you know, where the bug resided. But he's human. Humans will make mistakes.
Right. Show me a developer on a project who hasn't committed code that at some point may not have had to have been called back.
Exactly. But at the same time, I think there was a serious breakdown in I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, once you realize that one of your own people was responsible for check-ins and check-outs on this code, and you discover it, and they themselves discovered this flaw, for you to then turn around and turn it into a marketing opportunity, that just doesn't sit right with me.
Well, I think to me, and when I started picking through and understanding that was the case, it would have been sort of like, you know, General Motors, you know, sells 200,000 cars with defective brakes, and then, you know, has this massive campaign, you know, about safe brakes, and then tries to take credit for, you know, keeping the public safe and all that. Meanwhile, it was their own brake system. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to pick on General Motors. It's the first thing that popped in my head. But it's that sort of thing to where it was just, you know, is there the potential for some people to do, you know, to do some patching they needed to do anyway? Certainly. But it felt way too self-serving and just icky.
Yeah, and I want to take a little bit of responsibility here, because in the past, when we have discussed named vulnerabilities on the podcast, I feel like usually I'm the one jumping in and saying, yeah, but at least there's some awareness here. At least we're getting people to sit up and take note of some of these vulnerabilities that otherwise might have slipped under the radar. I think, unfortunately, now we've kind of seen the logical conclusion of where we were eventually moving to is that vulnerabilities are purely a marketing thing versus a vulnerability that has marketing attached, I guess.
So to your point, we've sort of passed peak Vuln logo.
I think so, yes.
And I think so. Let's talk about that, because that, you know, there were numerous conversations about bad luck that I had with various folks, both you know in the hospital and then just people that I talked to. And I think for those who are not information security, these are you know people in the line of business. It was interesting to see the ones that were watching the media and heard about bad luck and pinged me to make sure that we were ready to take whatever actions needed to be taken, you know, because obviously this was going to be really, really bad. And you know, did I need to reschedule meetings on Patch Tuesday so that we could evaluate it? It was great to see in the organization a willingness to do whatever needed to be done. And you know, your mileage may vary in whatever org you're in. I'm extremely fortunate where I'm at. But at the same time, now those same people know, because you know, we did our patch reviews and said, yeah, it's just we're not gonna treat this as an out of cycle. We're still going to go through our testing. We're going to deploy this quickly, but this is not a drop everything, you know, get this patch out there sort of thing. And I think if those things continue to happen, you start getting fatigue. And whether the folks in the business would identify it that way or not, they realize it's marketing hype, because they see this in so many other areas of the business to where, you know, there's a whole lot of hype and there's really nothing behind it. So they'll start ignoring it. And then to, you know, the argument, you know, and this is where Weldpond was talking about, was what's happening now is it's not being helpful. And it's sort of, I think in some organizations I could see where it's taking the air out of the room to talk about maybe a vulnerability that based on your particular situation is more serious than perhaps for other people. And the business leadership will look at you as you try to talk about it, but hey, but your people talked about bad luck and there was nothing to that one. Why should I trust you again, Chicken Little? And a lot of businesses, it only takes, you know, crying wolf one time for you to get a reputation or empower people who really don't want to play along. It empowers them or gives them the ammunition they need to push security aside. Because I think collectively we do lose some credibility when these things happen.
Absolutely.
I could see that entirely. And the problem is, the next time something huge really does happen, I mean, maybe not in your organization, Martin, because it looks like the line of business people do truly trust you and want your input. But for guys like me, you know, who were in charge of the patching and everything like that, I can almost guarantee you that if any of the business people were following it, this would have blown my capital with them when it came to getting their attention on actual important security projects.
It does, and it will. So I guess that boils down to, you know, inside the business, one of the things that you know, if you're a CISO, if you're someone on the blue team who's engaging the business, and it's not just business leaders, but it's whoever you're working with on the business side who might have an interest, we have to over-communicate. One, we need to let the folks at the business know, yes, we're aware of this. Let them know that what we're doing and that we're going to evaluate it and that we're not going to jump to conclusions. I think there were some folks out there on, you know, in the Twitter echo chamber who their hypothesizing got away with them. They were reading, oh, it's bad lock, therefore it must be file locking. If there's a file locking problem with SMB in Windows, the sun will supernova, and the fear ran away with them. And a couple of folks, I think, have been pretty embarrassed by that. We need to avoid that. We need to be very pragmatic. We need to be cautious, and we need to be alert, and we need to let our business partners know that's what we're doing. We're not going to waste corporate resources by reacting without good information. And, you know, with bad lock, what I came back with was, okay, we evaluated it. Yes, it's something that needs to be patched. Yes, we're going to patch it, you know, in our normal cycle. And we're going to continue to be on the lookout for more stuff. And, you know, I have a relationship with my business folks that enables me to do that. I've been in other places where I didn't, and this would have been a lot harder to cope with. And I can imagine there are other folks where their corporate culture or corporate IT culture would just, you know, there you go again, security people, you know, always trying to scare everyone, which is that's something that bothers me, because cautionary tales are good, like we talked about last time. FUD is the devil. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the Vuln hype complex is purely FUD. And I get why people do it. I totally get it. But it doesn't mean I like it. And the thing is, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know what we do about it. We can't stop people from doing this.
So I think one answer is the fact that researchers and developers and the companies behind some of these flaws need to take a step back and realize it is entirely possible to inform the public and your core customer base without overhyping anything. So let's look at bad lock as another example, okay? First of all, 3 weeks notification, that's pure sales. That's all that was. There was no need for it. This bug could have been alerted 48 hours in advance and it would have been fine. Nobody would have cared, especially if they were honest about it. This is a local exploit. It can lead to DDoS, or if they're already on your network, you can use man in the middle. Okay, we get that. Thank you for telling us. I don't use Samba on my network, so I'm not that impacted, but Microsoft's going to put out a patch so it'll get rolled into everything else. Have a nice day. You could have walked away from it. Or you could do like what they did with Heartbleed and literally 24 hours ahead of time, heads up, pay attention to this because it's going to impact all of you. And gave a really good, solid summary about the issue without giving anything away. Everybody was completely informed of what that bug was. And people were able to actually go through and kind of see where the bug was going. But it wasn't until the patch came out that you started seeing attacks and exploits on it, because nobody knew exactly where the code was. But when you reverse a patch, you can easily see what was fixed.
Right.
That's always going to happen. I think we shouldn't abandon naming bugs entirely, because I do agree with that basic concept. You know, when there's something that impacts everybody outside of our echo chamber, we need to have an easy-to-recall name that can put some light on that. Problem is, and this goes into what we were talking about before we started recording, Heartbleed is the boogeyman right now. You know that, and I actually wrote this. That name invokes a special kind of fear and has power when you use it in a slide deck or a presentation. People know what that is. They know what it was. And you can get attention with it, which means that now, you know, once was a good example of how to do disclosure is now FUD, because the sales team got a hold of it. And you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, because, you know, the next really good named bug that comes out, whenever that may be, it's going to have the same problem. It'll be great for a while and then it's going to turn against us.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. But again, I think at the end of the day, for the blue team, for the defender, it boils down to you have no control over the Vuln hype cycle. I think there are some of us in the community that perhaps can call it out and maybe even, you know, dare I say, shame people. But at the end of the day, people are going to do and say the things they want to do. And I think the way as a blue team guy that you handle it is you have that relationship with the business and you show that you can deal with, you know, Microsoft out of band patches or the stuff that comes out that really does need your work. And then you get that trust from your organization that says, we're aware of it, we'll evaluate it, and we'll let you know what we need to do. And from there, you just got to let the Vuln hype complex do what it's going to do, because we're not going to stop them. The naming and branding of bugs, I think, is only going to get bigger as time goes by, because the barrier to entry is so damn low. It costs what to get a URL and a quick website, and how much does it cost to send out press releases to, you know, a bazillion journalists? It's virtually nothing. And, you know, if it generates 3 sales leads that turn into contracts, your ROI is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and like you were saying, I think it really does boil down to the relationships that you have established with folks in your business. You know, I was approached by some of the folks on our teams that had, you know, products getting ready to go out the door and things like that, asking if they needed to halt everything before they could do, if it's only internal releases, but still, you know, did they need to halt build cycles and things like that? But because I had established a relationship with some of those developers, we could sit down, we could look at how this would really affect us, and then really kind of determine our risk. But without an effective relationship built, you know, that sort of thing just can't happen.
Right. If they're not willing to ask you that question, there's no way any action can happen. So, well, guys, I think we're going to cut it a little bit short. I don't think there's anything more new we can say about this. So real quick, if you would like to follow the podcast Twitter stream, it is at SFS Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. I swear this week I will get the podcast Facebook page up and running. Those of you who have been sending me messages as to, dude, this is lame, you're right, I'm sorry, we'll fix it. You can find the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher, and now, according to an email I just received, the Google Play Store will allow you to download the Southern Front Security Podcast. So I'm Martin Fisher. With me again was Steve Reagan. Steve, how can people get in touch with you if they want to talk more with you about the Vuln hype complex?
So you can find me on Twitter, SteveD3, and of course, my author page on CSO Online has all of my juicy contact details. Feel free to reach out.
And Mr. Ciccoli, all the fangirls who are desperately wanting to know how they can send you, you know, just their deep words of admiration. I'll reach out to you.
Wow, that went a different direction. I'm glad for that.
Before this gets out of hand, you can find me on Twitter at JCiccoli.
Absolutely. And I'm at Armor Guy. And on behalf of the sadly absent Andy Willingham and Yvette Johnson, we wish you a good night. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Night, everybody.